Live from the Hanania studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Monday with Brian Sexton, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Baptist Health System and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
Good evening and welcome inside the Hanania studio at Everbank Field for Jaguars Monday. I'm Brian Sexton. Tony Baselli's across the table. Pete Prisco joins us in just a moment from Los Angeles, where he's working on the Jim Rome show all week long. Let's give you our big three because...
Wait a second. That's not actually accurate.
It's not?
Pete was afraid after the beatdown he took last week from me throughout the entire show. He was afraid.
What are you talking about?
He was afraid to come into the studio and face me man to man, so he had to call in and try to look for a little buffer and protection.
Baselli.
Yeah.
I'm 2-0 against you.
You're crazy.
I love this show. I love it a lot.
I've had more phone calls and tweets and emails saying keep on putting Prisco right in his right where he belongs, in his place.
You can get all that. All I have to do is point to the scoreboard. Winner.
All right, guys. Here's the three big stories that we're covering in this first hour of Jaguars this week, and we'll talk about it starting in just a moment. First of all, what worked on Saturday evening? That's our top story for the Jaguars against the Philadelphia Eagles. Top topic this evening, and there was plenty. Tony watched the tape. Pete was here. We'll talk about that. Also, realistic expectations for what this team is going to be this year. And finally, the roster. Look, first line of cuts already made, second coming up Saturday, and this Jacksonville team with the roster where it is, going to be very involved in trying to upgrade every day over the course of the season. So let's start, Pete, Tony, with what worked on Saturday evening. And Tony, we talked earlier today, and the first thing you mentioned was Luke Jokel in the offensive line.
Yeah, I thought the offensive line played well. And I thought Luke Jokel coming back, being out basically 2 weeks with the hip flexor, you know, a little bit of rust, but watching the tape closely, I thought he was dominant in the run game. I mean, he is so physical and moves people off the spot, and he's a very good pass blocker. He got beat up. He gave a little pressure on inside move, but he showed his athletic ability where he's able at least to recover and knock the guy off before he could hit Chad Henne. It was actually on the touchdown pass, and I thought he played well. Listen, I thought Eugene Monroe played his best game at the left tackle. You know, sometimes veterans work their way into playing shape and playing, you know, kind of style, and I thought he was played well against Trent Cole. And overall, you know, the downside was Will Rackley getting hurt the first play of the game. Brewster came in, but they still ran the ball well and for the most part gave good protection. So offensively, without Blaine Gabbert, Chad Henne in there, I thought we saw the offense again in just, you know, 2.5 quarters put up 24 points and pretty much consistently moved the ball up and down the field. They had a couple three and outs, but for the most part, very positive.
Yeah, and you know what, too, Tony, you got to remember this too, though. The Eagles' defense stinks.
No, I agree.
I mean, I'm not gonna be the guy that ruins the party and throws whatever in the punch bowl. But the bottom line is the Eagles stink on defense.
Yeah,
their secondary's bad.
I agree, Pete.
They don't rush the passer.
Trent Cole can still rush passes a little bit.
Hey, but he's making a transition to an outside rusher, and he had a bad year last year, and he's going to be 31. I mean, in his heyday, yeah, he could rush the passer, but I don't know. I'll give you this. I agree with you. I think that the offensive line played well. I thought they were better as a unit, and, you know, there were some good things. I mean, there's a chance that offense can be pretty good. It sounds crazy after everything that they've been through in the last couple of years, but the offense has a chance to be, if not good, at least entertaining.
You know, they got good news today. Gus Bradley announced after practice about Will Rackley. And, you know, Rackley's a guy they were worried about when he went down the other night. You know, was it the knee? It didn't look good. It looked ugly at one point. And with this perilously thin depth, especially on the offensive line, the loss of Will Rackley would have really hurt, and it appears that they will not have to go long without him. It is not the knee. It is not a high ankle sprain, just a lateral, and the head coach earlier today talked about getting him back for the Kansas City game.
Happy to hear it's just a sprained ankle. We'll be out this week, but there's a good chance we'll have him back for the Kansas City game next week.
So what you're talking about, Pete, is the ability for this team to be consistent. It would be difficult to be consistent if they lost one of their five starting offensive linemen.
And I think he has a chance to be good, by the way. I go back to his rookie year when he handled Haloti Ngata in that Monday night game. He just handled him. He dominated him, in fact. And then he got hurt, and I always thought he was a little too light in the way they wanted him to play. He's gotten stronger. I think he's gotten bigger. The offensive line from tackle to tackle can be pretty good. And I say that, and after everything that they've been through on offense, again, I say that, and I hit myself, but it can be, and Tony knows better than me, but I think on that offensive line they can be pretty solid up front.
Well, and I agree with Pete that their defense of the Eagles is not going to be very good. They're making the transition from a 4-3 to a 3-4. But I go back, and I know it's only preseason, so we got to really temper everything we say and set expectations. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But this team, it took about three games for them to score 24 points last year. They scored 24 in two and a half quarters. Two quarters and one drive, really. And this team's faster outside. They're faster in the backfield with Denard Robinson and Todman when he's in there. They still have Maurice Jones-Drew, who has a good mix of power and quickness and explosiveness. If Blaine Gabbert, we go back to him, if he can play consistently and build what he did on the Jets, this is going to be I don't know how good they're going to be. I still think top 15 in the league as far as yardage and as how we measure offenses. But I agree with Pete on this point. It's going to be fun because Jed Fish is very, very – I think he's a very good play caller. I think he has a great imagination and scheme-wise and how to put his players in a good position. And you're going to get a lot of different looks. You're going to see the ball in the air in a steady run game with the zone scheme. I was excited coming out of the last two preseason games of what I saw offensively.
Maurice is too.
It's just tough because we don't have everybody there. You know, obviously Mercedes, getting Cecil back, Blackman back. You know, we haven't all been together as one. You know, waiting for me to come back as well. So when we all get back together, I think that'll be exciting.
You know, and Pete, we've seen the last 2 weeks, again, keeping it all tempered against who they were playing, you know, and the fact that it was a preseason game. You know, they've done it, you know, with Cecil, with Blackman, you know, with Cecil and Blackman together without Mercedes. You know, they got Joko 1 week. They didn't have him the next. They didn't have their starting quarterback. I mean, the pieces are in place, so you talk about, you know, what could be. They could be pretty good. Doesn't it come down to Jed Fish and how he puts the pieces in place? I mean, isn't he going to end up being a very key part of that?
Yeah, I think it comes down to Blaine Gabbert. I mean, you know, he could put him in all the spots and make it easier for him, but it still comes down to the quarterback. But I'll say this about Jed Fish, and I've talked to a lot of – I know a lot of the young coaches in this league. I've gotten to know them a little bit, guys like him and some of his buddies and around the league and some of the veteran coaches. And the one thing that they say about Jed Fish, he's not afraid. And I think that's a great thing for an offensive coordinator. And I go to the best play caller, the guy I think is the best play caller in the league, and that's Sean Payton. Sean Payton isn't afraid. And now he's the head coach, so it's different. But he wasn't afraid when he was given the chance to be free with the offense in any spot he was in. And I think that's a good thing. There's an arrogance to being a play caller in the NFL. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in all this stuff about, well, you got to run the ball, you got to do this. Well, you do have to run the ball, but you run the ball after you throw it to score. And I think Jed is one of those guys, when you look at his what he's going to do, yeah, he'll run the ball, and they have the zone runs, and they're going to be good at that. But I think he's going to be one of those guys that's not afraid to take chances. And I think the Jaguars and the fans of Jacksonville should be thankful for that.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351, if you'd like to join us on the program this evening. If you're in the outlying areas, 800-355-6351. Tony, you talk to Jed Fish every pregame. I've seen you the three games so far, and I know you talk to him during the week. In terms of his personality and his approach, I mean, what can you add here?
Well, you know, this is going to be a compliment because Pete and I argue about a lot of things, but we also agree on a lot of things. I do think there's a level, and it's a fine line between confidence and arrogance of being good at anything. And you have to have that self-belief of what you're doing is better than the other guy. And Jed has that. He's a confident guy. He's very, very bright. And he started his career in Houston, and I was on that team, as a defensive quality assistant. And so he was under Vic Fangio and Dom Capers, and so he understands, and all coaches do, but he really has a nice grasp of the defensive side of the ball and what they're trying to do. And I think that helps him offensively as he schemes and he designs and he calls plays and how he looks at things. And I think he has the right temperament for this team as well. It's a young team.
You probably, by the way, you probably brushed by him in the hallway, not thinking anything. You big.
No,
you
that's not true.
I'm Tony Boselli.
No,
no. Pro Bowler.
No. First of all, I was pretty humble because my left shoulder wasn't working at all. And even if the shoulder was working perfectly, I always liked those guys who were working their way up and were good guys. And Jed and I were friends back then.
I'm kidding you, by the way. If anybody out there believes that, Tony was never one of those guys.
But you know, I think he's going to be really good. I think ultimately he's going to be a head coach one day. I mean, I think he's that talented, and I think he's a good communicator. Well, and now listen, we're saying all this. I like him, so I'm biased, and I know Pete likes him as well. And at the end of the day, we'll sit back here in end of December, beginning of January, and we'll have a good feel for what this entire staff and this entire team is. But so far, the last two preseason games, and we'll talk about the defense as well because they did some good things as well. They got exposed a little bit in some situations. But this team, just the speed of the team and the style of play, and they have a little more swagger now. Just all around, it's such a better feeling. And I was saying this in – and Pete, you know this, watching preseason. I was doing a radio interview today. Last year, this team was 3-1 in the preseason. And, you know, everyone was positive, and which, you know, you want to be. This team's 0-3 right now, and I feel so much better about this situation and this team and the roster even than I did last year. And that's where you got to be so careful when you look at these preseason games and records and what comes out of it.
Yeah, but the other thing is, too, you have to remember is this is kind of a free year for everybody. And so I think there's also a different way to look at it. Last year, people thought the Jaguars were actually going to be good or at least competitive.
I think people thought
this
they
year,
would be.
I think,
competitive.
Yeah, and so this year – I think people are looking at it a little more realistic and understanding that it's a process. It's going to take time. But while it's being built, it's getting into something that's going to be good 3, 4, 5 years down the road, watching it can be fun too. And I think that's what we're seeing out of this team now is there's, for the fans out there, if you look at the team, there's excitement for the first time in a long time for those fans. I mean, a lot of fans, and I did radio for 7 years in that town, and I listen to fans, and I'm around. I cover that team. You know, back in the day, fans were excited about the team when Jimmy and you and Fred and Mark Brunell and everybody were on that team. And then it got stale. And I think the stale is gone, replaced by a fresh new attitude with new players that are exciting to watch. So even if the team isn't good, and I don't, by the way, I don't think they will be, but even if they're not good, they're going to be fun to watch because you're going to see young players like Ace Sanders, Denard Robinson, and guys like that doing their thing. So I do think there's a little bit of freshness in the building.
We know you don't think they're going to be good. You only have them winning 3 games in your ridiculous preseason picks, and that's fine. I do think they're going
to by the way, I picked the Colts to win 1 last year, and they never let me forget it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think they're going to be competitive. Right. I'm not saying they're going to the playoffs or anything, but I think this will be a competitive team week in and week out. I don't see them – I mean, there's going to be rough spots. Listen,
coming.
They're going to play a lot of rookies and start a lot of rookies, and when that happens, there's rough spots. But I think they're competitive.
Those, by the way, the realistic expectations that we'll talk about coming up in a little bit when we return to Jaguars Monday with Pete Prisco live from Los Angeles and Tony Boselli. We'll talk about what the defense did well on Saturday night against the Eagles. And tonight at 7 on CBS 47, join our partner Jeff Loggeman and Brent Martineau for Jaguars All Access with special guests, head coach Gus Bradley. You're listening to Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio. All right, an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health System, changing healthcare for good. You heard, if you were with us in the last segment, head coach Gus Bradley mentioned that it appears that Will Rackley could play against Kansas City on opening day. Beyond that, really, Justin Forsett started to sprint a bit today. You're just not going to see many of the starters, so an injury report, so to speak, for this week's game, not really relevant. They'll obviously have that next week, and we will update you with it every single Jaguars Monday. But the news today on the injury front, Will Rackley, ankle sprain, could be available on opening day. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what you saw on the defensive tape, Jeff. Sorry, you're sitting in Jeff's seat. Tony.
Jeff, that's an insult. Listen, against the Jets, this defensive line didn't win in one-on-one. And I was talking to Todd Wash, and he talked about the need. I mean, if you want to rush four, you have to have guys who can win one-on-one, because you're going to get at least two guys matched up one-on-one. And when you have that opportunity, you have to win some percentage of the time. I mean, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but they didn't win. They were at 0% against the Jets. And so I wanted to watch the tape and see, are our front four guys getting there? And they did at times. Maybe not as consistent as we like, but I thought Sendarek Marks played better this week in one-on-one. Babin got some things going against the rookie, which was nice. I thought Mintz rushed the passer, got a holding penalty, won on some one-on-one run game, had a tackle for a loss. So that was a positive, and I continue to like to see how this team runs. They're faster. The addition of Grotz, the addition of Cyprian back there, and Geno Hayes. This is a faster team on defense with those guys on the field. Now, the concerning thing, and it's hard to tell watching the game live and then even on tape unless you know exactly what the calls are and what they're trying to do. But from my standpoint and viewpoint of watching this, it looks like we're much better in man coverage right now. When we played man, we forced Vic to hold the ball longer, allowed the rush to get there. When we went zone, we lost the tight end a number of times in the middle of the field. And I think that can happen when you have young guys in the secondary. You have a guy like Cyprian who has, you know, missed a lot of training camp, second preseason game, and even Grotz, who more natural playing, you know, in man coverage. You get in zone, and zone is an art probably more than a science. I mean, you have to be able to feel your way around and feel where people are, the receivers are in your area, and be able to kind of drift or float back into those. And even on the touchdown pass, if you go back to the touchdown pass, I can't remember what tight end it was for the Eagles, but he just kind of sat back down in the back of the end zone, and Cyprian never got any depth, and you had Lowry and Grotz, and it just all night. And Pete, I know you were there. It just seemed like whenever we went zone, those tight ends for the Eagles were wide open.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing to do for young corners and young safety people, is to learn how to play zone. And it's funny because even when you go around the league and you talk about a guy like Darrell Revis, who's played, you know, man his whole life, press man his whole life in the NFL, and people wonder, well, what's he going to be like if they ask him to play more zone? Because it's an adjustment. And so I think it's even more of an adjustment for young guys, because they tend to, like you said, they tend to drift and get lost and lose focus, and they see something, you know, come on, maybe on the right side of their eye and right from the right side, and they move and drift that way and leave a vacant area over. But that takes repetition and time. And to me, seeing guys capable of winning in man coverage, that's huge, because that's exactly what Gus wants to play on defense. He wants physical corners who can beat up receivers off the line like he had in Seattle, and then you can play the single safety and drop the other guy down to help in the run game. And that's what he did in Seattle, and if you can get that out of the corners, I think that's a big plus.
Well, and Grotz, I mean, again, second interception of the preseason, and going against some good players. I mean, Mike Wallace against the Miami Dolphins really took him out of the game. And again, now let's temper this. I mean, I'm going to tell a story here in a second where we don't want to get too excited about anything. And then against DeSean Jackson, a guy who can run and stretch the field and is difficult, I watched Grotz was on him quite a bit and did a very good job. But here's the flip side to all that. Remember, in 1996, we're playing the St. Louis Rams in the Dome in the preseason, and Leslie O'Neal. And, Pete, you remember Leslie O'Neal.
Oh, yeah, he was a great pass rusher.
And he was near the end of his career. Wasn't at the end. And I remember watching him in college and even in high school when he was a Charger and playing against the Broncos. And I remember we're playing preseason. We go out there, and Leslie O'Neal, and I go out there, and it was fairly easy. I mean, this is easy, no problem. I mean, he's obviously, you know, lost a step. We played him, I think, week five that year, back in St. Louis, back in the Dome.
It was the five-interception game.
Five interceptions by Brunell. And I remember the first pass rush, the first play that we were in a passing situation, and he came off the ball at an entirely different pace and aggression. And immediately, you know, he didn't get there, but I was quickly awakened to the fact that this is not the preseason anymore, and this was a veteran who was coasting a little bit, and now it is time to play, because it was a whole nother level. And it'll be interesting, Pete, when we get into the regular season, we're playing all this man, how Grotz matches up against the number one receivers in the NFL. I think he'll do fine, but there are going to be some growing pains in that process.
No question. The intensity goes up. And by the way, how many times in your life have you yelled, Willie Jackson, go down, Willie? Willie, go down.
Yeah, I can still remember that. You know what?
All you had to do was go down and you kick a field goal.
At the end of the day, it didn't matter. We still got in the playoffs.
All right, we have come to the bottom of the hour. It's time for news from News Talk WOKV. When we return, Pete Prisco live in L.A., Tony Boselli here in the Hanania studio with me, and we talk about realistic expectations for the Jaguars in 2013, 5 days before Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley will cut the roster for their very first time together. More to come after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the Hanania studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
All right, welcome back. In Jacksonville, in the Hanania studio at Everbank Field, Brian Sexton and Tony Boselli. Pete Prisco live from Los Angeles, and our big three stories around here today. What worked on Saturday evening, realistic expectations, and finally, the roster shakeup that is coming on Saturday. And we're right now talking about realistic expectations. You know, this is probably a conversation that would work next week as well, after the cut has been made. But what the heck, since we're sitting here now a few days before the preseason finale that really means nothing in terms of starters, let's talk about where this team is, how active they'll be with the roster, and what really makes sense in terms of what this team can be.
Well, if you're a Jaguar fan, watch as many preseason games as you can this Thursday night, including ours. But DVR, go to the preview, the replay on NFL Network, go to NFL.com, because I think there's anywhere from 5 to 10 players out there that are going to be in Jaguar uniforms. Who they are, I have no idea. So,
you mean 5 to 10 in the next week, 10 days, or you mean 5 to 10 over the next 2 months?
I would say in the next 2 weeks.
Wow.
Because I think week one, there's going to be some veterans you don't want to sign because they're vested and you have to lock them up for the year. But I think at least 5. I know Jeff Logan and I disagree a little bit on that. He thinks at the most 5. But I just think the bottom of this roster is going to be turned over. I think it'll be all throughout the year, and they're going to be looking to get better for multiple different reasons. One, as big as any, is for special teams.
You know, Pete, you used the word process earlier, and we were talking before the game on Saturday night that this roster is – you would normally draft guys in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round, and you would plug them in so they would become your depth. But in this case, Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, because of how thin this roster was when they inherited it, they got to put these guys into positions where they contribute right away, so the depth really just isn't there.
Yeah, and when you have injuries, that's really going to show up. But I'm with Tony. I think there's going to be a lot of guys who make the final roster who might think they're comfortable who will find out that they shouldn't be. And that's the right thing to do. I don't know how many vested veterans they'll sign even the second week, because it just depends, because this is a team building for something in the future. But I do think there's going to be a lot of turnover. And you can look and you can figure out the positions. I mean, if you're a defensive end on that team, I wouldn't feel too comfortable. I think they'll look for help there. They'll look for help at linebacker, no question about it. If a guy pops free that they like, they'll pick up one there. So I think if you're a veteran player or even a young player who makes the final roster, don't get too comfortable because you might not be around for long.
Well, let's just go through this right now. I mean, you look at, to Brian's point, I mean, you usually draft those middle to late rounders to be special teams players, practice squad, end of the roster, develop them for future years. Dwayne Grotz, a 3rd rounder, is going to be a starter. Cyprian, a 2nd rounder, is going to be a starter. Leroy Reynolds, a undrafted free agent, is the 4th linebacker and is one snap away from being a starter and still going to play some significant, you know, is going to have to be a contributor. You got your number 1 pick, which is not unheard of, and Luke Jokel is a starter. Ace Sanders is going to start the first four games for you. He's a 4th rounder. Denard Robinson is a 5th rounder, is going to be a part of the offensive package, and it can be your kick returner. I mean,
no, you're right on.
I mean, those are the guys.
So where's your depth?
That
it's coming.
It's the middle. I mean, you're looking middle to undrafted free agents that are going to come in and have to play. And that doesn't even speak to the fact that your nickel right now is a second-year player in Mike Harris. I mean, you go down the list of guys that you're expecting to make an impact that don't have a lot of playing time.
Do you think there could be a radical change at any position group? And let me offer this. I'll, again, throwing this out there for conversation's sake. But You know, we talked about the lack of depth on the offensive line. Mike Brewster started 7 games a year ago. Did he give you any sense this summer during training camp that he'd gotten strong enough to handle playing left guard or even right guard for that matter? Drew Nowak is still making the position shift. Austin Pasdor started 3 games at left guard last year. You know, Cam Bradfield started 13 at right tackle, but he got beat soundly the other night against Philadelphia. Would it surprise you if, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 of those guys aren't on the roster, that the Jaguars go and find guys?
Yes, and Pete can speak to this better than I can because he's covering and paying more attention to the league. I mean, teams league-wide. Every NFL team has offensive line depth. You're not – I mean, rarely do you see a good offensive lineman get cut or even an average offensive lineman get cut because those guys are hard to find. It's hard to find big men who can move. And so – that's a position I'm sure they'd like to upgrade, and they'd like to upgrade a lot of positions. But my guess is Mike Brewster is going to be your swing guard and your backup center.
Yeah, the backup offensive lines in the NFL are terrible. I mean, they're pathetic. And you can get lucky maybe down the road and develop a guy, but for the most part, it's going to be hard to find guys you can bring in and just get rid of the guys that you have and be an upgrade. Now, there might be a guy who's playing tackle for somebody now who doesn't fit as a tackle, and you might be able to move him inside the guard. And I'll give you a perfect example. San Francisco, you know, signed Alex Boone as an undrafted free agent tackle out of Ohio State, and he's now developed into a good guard because he wasn't good enough and fast enough to play tackle. So you might be able to do some of that. You know, Tony, you mentioned something before about all the young players who are playing. Here's the question that I think is interesting when you talk about that. How many of them would be playing and starting slash contributing on other teams? I think that'd be fun to do if we take a look and run down the guys and say, okay, would Cyprian be starting on half the teams in the NFL? Would Grotz be? And I think if we do that, you'll find out that that draft was, I think, better than you think it was.
No, I think it's very good, Pete. I think Grotz is going to be a legitimate corner in this league.
Okay,
I mean,
so how many teams does he start? How many teams does he start?
I'd have to look at all the different teams in
but
a permit.
Probably maybe half, right? Maybe you know, as a rookie,
My point is most teams might have one or two of those guys that are going to contribute,
right. but not all of them.
And so, listen, in a perfect world.
Don't you think that's a legitimate question, though, is to run?
Yes.
Let me see. Okay, let's run through the guys. Well, Jokel would start for
anybody.
A majority of teams in the league.
I mean, Luke Jokel is going to be a big-time player in my opinion.
I agree. And so he would start for every team in the league. At one, either right tackle or left tackle, he would start for every team in the league. Then you go to Grotz, to Cyprian. He would start for a lot of teams in the NFL. He's just, you know, a lot of safety struggle in the NFL. I think he would start for a lot of teams. Grotz. Probably not as many as those two, but he would probably start.
But he'd be
for,
your nickel.
A Sanders as a slot receiver would be a slot receiver for a lot of teams.
I think Ace is going to be very good, but I think if you have more depth, I mean, Ace is going to be a starter the first 4 weeks. I don't think Ace
right.
is going to
be. He should be the third receiver is what he should be.
He should be your punt returner and your third receiver.
Right, but on a lot of teams, he could do that. So, I think when you say
I agree
that
with
a
you.
Lot
I think,
of those guys are playing, yeah.
I think I agree with you, Pete, in the sense that I think it's an outstanding draft. Now, we've also thought about that good drafts in the past and didn't play out over 3 years. But I think this is a very good group. My whole point is I don't think you draft where you your first 5 guys you pick where you expect them to come start day one. Or play significant roles day one on your team.
Well, just ask yourself, I mean, 3 years from now, if they're successful in this build, do you have every rookie starting?
No, I mean...
contributing significantly.
What you want, I mean, you always want your...
Other than special teams.
You want your first rounder to be a guy who you can plug and start, in most cases. And it's even second round, a guy who's... But you like those guys that you bring in to be guys you can plug in, that you develop, like Pete talked about. And so year two and year three, they become those starters. Listen, it is hard to start day one as a rookie. It's a big transition, especially at certain positions. I mean, as good as I think as Dwayne Grotz is, and I think he's outstanding. I think that I have no idea how he went in the third round. I mean, Pete, what was the knock on him? Why did he go down to the third? I mean, he can run.
Yeah, that's a strange one because so many teams liked him.
I mean, he can run.
You know,
he has size.
There are a lot of teams that liked him.
I mean, and so maybe someone knows something we don't. But, I mean, you'd like in a perfect world, a guy like that come in and be your third corner and come on in nickel situations, which is still critical in this league because everyone's in nickel the entire game.
All right, more to come with Pete Prisco live from Los Angeles and Tony Boselli here in the Hanania studio. You can go along in the fuel-efficient Ford Escape. See your Southern Ford dealer today. They're a proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further and come back with us for more Jaguars Monday here on Jaguars Radio.
Thursday is a very dangerous game, man. I've played in that fourth preseason game before. Feels up to me. I'd do what the coach told me to do, so I'll leave it at that.
That's Maurice Jones-Drew in the locker room today, not playing on Thursday night. And there are a lot of guys who will be out of the ball game altogether quickly for Gus Bradley, and we don't expect to see much from the Atlanta Falcons. They're a contender. They don't need to prove anything to anyone.
I don't see any of them.
No. The Jaguars are in a completely different situation, Pete Prisco, out in Los Angeles, because they've got so many guys. And not just draft pick, but look at the last 2 years, the number of undrafted guys who are in positions to contribute. I mean, Mike Brown's the third wide receiver, undrafted out of Liberty a year ago. You know, we know about Cam.
They didn't even play wide receiver in college.
No, played quarterback and played in one game last year. One. Now he might open the season as your third wide receiver. Cam Bradfield started 13 games last year, undrafted a few years ago. We know about Mike Brewster. You know, right now, Drew Nowak and Austin Pasdor, the backups on the right side, they're both undrafted guys. Reisner was undrafted out of Iowa, went to Minnesota before coming down here. If you have a fullback, either one, Tafo'o or Pryor, both guys were undrafted rookie free agents a few years ago.
Go look at the linebackers.
Yeah, I mean, Julian Stanford's on the roster, LeRoy Reynolds, Mike Zimmer.
We're not making any excuses. I'm just saying.
Just pointing at this. This is a
the reality of this year is a building year. And the exciting thing is, if you're a Jaguar fan, is you look at how they're building and you look at the progress. You look at what Dave Caldwell's done. You look how this team's responded on Gus Bradley so far and how the young players so far in the preseason are making a positive impact. And the reality is, what I expect from this team, there's going to be rough patches, but I think it's a team that gets better as the year goes on. And you see the young players. Young players get better with reps. And the more chance they get.
Tony, the other thing, too, about the final preseason game, and, you know, Brian was talking about who would play, I wouldn't play any starters if it was me.
I disagree.
And I know that's tough.
If I'm the Falcons, I wouldn't. I'm not playing any if I'm the Falcons, but I'm playing some if I'm the Jags. I got a right tackle who's I'd like to just get as many reps as I possibly can. I mean, I'm not saying I'm playing a bunch. I play him a couple series. You know, I got young players out there.
Let me ask you this. Is that couple series, is that worth it to in comparison if you say, okay, well, what's the risk factor on it? Why bother? I mean, well, he's got a ton of reps on the practice field. He doesn't – I mean, you know, a couple more reps in a game isn't going to decide whether he's ready to go on the opening day, I don't think.
Well, I'm just saying for the young guys, 2 weeks off between games, between, you know, live looks. I agree, Pete, for the most part. I really do. In almost every other situation, I would say I wouldn't play one guy. But I'm saying I'd get limited reps for some of my guys out there.
If you remember this. You didn't play in the first preseason, right? You didn't play in the fourth. Did you play in the fourth
no.
one? You
no, didn't. I didn't play in any.
No. How did Tom – this is so bad, I don't even remember how he handled it. But if I remember correctly, he played veterans.
I'll tell you this.
Into that.
Every preseason –
That was the fifth preseason game, by the way.
Every preseason I was healthy.
That's
and we,
right.
We played two series in the fourth preseason game.
They did. They played in the preseason
Mark
in game
played.
Five against Denver here at the stadium. They did.
Right. I see. Me, that's okay. That's back then. It was a little different. You didn't have the year-round training the way they do now with all these injuries and stuff. It's just not worth the risk. I think this game should be eliminated. By the way,
I think
the preseason should be eliminated.
No, not completely. I think you need a couple preseason games to get a look at your team, what the makeup is, allow what young guys a chance to win jobs. There's always undrafted free agents that make some noise on the field that end up being very good players. And it's because of the preseason they get their opportunities to do that. I think it should be two games, though, not four.
Does that mean you're
for an 18 regular season game?
That's where I always have
it. I'd be all for it. I don't care. Listen,
here's
the thing. Everyone goes, oh, it's such a drain on the body, and it's so, you know, injuries.
What's good for me, right, Pete?
Well, the other side of
right.
it is I was exhausted week 12 or in week 16. I mean, am I going to be any more exhausted I mean, don't you get to a point where you just, I mean.
You tell us.
I think you do. I mean, we.
Yeah, Tony. I mean, but here's the other thing, too. Why would.
Well, my other question is, though, do I make more money if I play 18 games?
Yes.
I'm in.
Yes, you're going to make more money if you play 18.
I'm in.
Of course you're in, and so would every other player in the league. And they, we keep hearing all this pushback on 18 games. And the, how much happier would the fans be to pay for a game that actually counts?
Well, they pay the exact same amount. They pay
right.
for it. They pay
that's
for
what I'm
it.
Saying.
They pay
but
for it
be
now.
Paying, they'll be paying for games that count.
But the problem is,
to
Pete,
me, that's the biggest difference.
Let me put my – if I was an owner, I want four preseason games.
Sure, because you don't split the money.
I make more money.
Okay, but what happens if you add two regular season games and you get more money from the networks to compensate for it?
Well, it would have to at least equal out. I mean, they make a lot of money because their payroll is minuscule. They don't share the gate, get all the local TV revenue and everything else. I mean, from my understanding, I haven't ever looked at the books, but it's a pretty good moneymaker if you're an owner, and I don't blame them. They're in it for making money. If as a player, I'm going to say I'd play 18 because I want more money. What's wrong with the owners making more money? My problem is so often you get people like thinking wanting to make more money is a bad thing. If you're an owner.
Who are these people?
Oh, you hear, oh, the owners are greedy. What do you mean they're greedy? Or players are greedy? What do you mean they're greedy? Every person listening to this show.
Would take more money.
If their boss said, listen, I'll give you a 20% raise, you're not going to say, no. I'm very good where I'm at. I mean, come on. Owners invest hundreds of millions of dollars to own a team. If they want to figure out a way to make more money, I'm all for it, just as a player.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's good for everybody, and the people, the fans would get a better product, and I think the players, if you gave more money, they'd be okay with it.
But Pete, I agree. In the long haul, I think it would be better for the brand and the game and everything else, but the brand's pretty good in the NFL. The fans... I love our fans. The NFL fans are the greatest fans of any sport. And I'm sure all my soccer-listening fans in Europe would argue with it. I'm sure they're great fans over here. But games that here in the United States, there's nothing better than NFL fans. Are they going anywhere if we keep four preseason games?
Right.
I mean,
look, the bottom line is the product on the field right now is horrendous, terrible. In the preseason, why not find a way to make it better? And you're losing players to games that don't matter. So why not?
Well, I agree. Listen, I'm all for it. Two preseason games, heck. Selfishly, as a veteran guy, give me one. Don't give me any. Just let me go play. But I, for the good of the game, I think the preseason, you need some preseason for young players and guys that earn jobs.
But why can't you just have workouts like with the other teams? You go spend a couple. You spend a week with them and. Or, you know, 3 days with them and you get your work that way against them.
Well, I think you can do that. But I mean, you still have the chances of injury and everything else doing that, Pete.
I think when the lights go on
and you're on in a game situation, certain players separate themselves. There are guys who look great on the practice field for whatever reason, and when it counts in the big moment when you have to play a game and react and face adversity and go through things, they don't perform. And I want to find that out if I'm building a team and watch that.
You know, this has been a nice first hour.
Give me two guys, by the way, in your career, one who looked good on the practice field and one good in the game, and one who didn't look good on the practice field but was good in the game.
Look good in
– Call him out.
Well, there was one guy. I can't even remember his name. I honestly can't. But there was a guy that was here, and he was a practice squad guy, and he was All-American on the practice field, rushing the passer, and – he was, you know, he was giving everyone fits, and it was just, he was a pain. Tom would be yelling at us, you know, and all this stuff because he'd mess up drills. And he got picked up by the Baltimore Ravens the week before we played him. And he happened to play against me. And all of a sudden it was for real. I don't think he got off the line of scrimmage. It was different. And I was like, listen, now we're playing for real. And now, you know, let's see if you can do it all the time. It's much harder.
All right. When we come back. We look around the National Football League coming up at 7:20. It's the Coffee Facts face-off between Pete and Tony. Tonight they're talking about the NFL and ESPN and their tiff regarding the Frontline series on PBS and concussions. We come back after the news with another hour of Jaguars Monday, live from the Hanania Studio at Everbank Field after this news break on Jaguars Radio.
Live from the Hanania studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Monday with Brian Sexton, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Baptist Health System and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
All right, welcome back to the Hanania studio. Brian Sexton, Tony Baselli here, Pete Prisco in L.A. And Pete, we got to get you back here. The show's too nice. I mean, without
well, let
you
me change
room,
that real quick because
you and Baselli aren't even going at each other.
Pete, you know, I was taking a little browse on the internet, found my way to CBSSports.com and to an article that you wrote on the Philadelphia Eagles. It was pretty well done about the whether offensive linemen can handle the pace and be in shape and everything else. But then I kind of scrolled down, and it said, there I said it, things you said. And I'll read it verbatim. Vic will be the same maddening quarterback he's been for much of his career. He will put up huge numbers, but he will also turn it over a bunch. They're running the spread, read option, Pete. How's Vic going to put up all these huge numbers? I thought that was going to be dead by November. And that all the quarterbacks will be knocked out and not be able to play.
How much read option do you really think he's going to run?
Oh, he ran quite a bit in the game. I think he ran for 58 yards against us. And,
he ran on a lot of scrambles.
And the read option was a play that held the backside linebacker. He got hit a couple times running it. So, I mean, yeah,
He's going to put up huge numbers until he gets hurt.
Is this an admittance that I was right?
No.
It's in print.
No.
So
no.
are you a hypocrite?
Kelly's smart enough, he's not going to get that guy hit on a regular basis. And just like every other read option team in the NFL.
Okay. I thought you had to reach a certain amount of words for your article and you were trying to figure out things to put in there and you just kind of threw that out there.
No. Did you watch the game last night? They specifically talked about how the people are going to hit the quarterback and read option guys are going to take too many shots and off they go. We watch.
Okay.
That thing will be dead by November. Dead by November.
If it's dead by November, I'm trying to figure out how Vic's going to put up huge numbers in.
Passing it. Because Chip Kelly's offense is not basically all about running the read option. He throws the football. He gets the ball out of his hands. Although he did hold it a little bit the other night.
Yeah, make up your mind.
He had all day. Didn't he see at times he had all day to throw the football sometimes?
He did.
9.3 seconds on one particular play.
Yeah, too much time.
All right, listen.
Read option dead by November. We should hang that banner up there, and then when November rolls around, you can look up at it and say Prisco was right.
Well, you better start being a little more consistent in your articles. I don't want to be reading this junk.
All right, so let's stay with the position, different team. And that's the Jets and Rex Ryan and the decision to put Sanchez back in.
Disaster.
They're obviously being panned. I mean, just crucified on this one. Do the Jets jump to the front of the line in terms of weakness of roster if they have Geno Smith starting the entire season?
They jump to the front of the line of dysfunction.
They were there anyway.
Well, they're right up there with the Raiders. I mean, my goodness.
Seriously, though, I mean, if they don't have
– Who puts your quarterback who's going to be your starting quarterback after the rookie you put in there who's been out for part of camp, those three picks, and looks like a disaster, steps out of the back of the end zone, doesn't know where he is, and you're going to put your starter in there in the fourth quarter with a bunch of guys that will be doing something else besides playing football in a week? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and I don't get it, Tony. Win the game, he said. I don't get the rationale. I mean, we just talked earlier in the show about how bad the backup offensive linemen are in the NFL. And even though it's the backup defensive lineman on the other team, the backup defensive linemen are significantly better than the backup offensive lineman in the NFL. So why would you subject him to even be in the game at that point? It made no sense whatsoever. And then he babbled on after the game, and he got, you know, for Rex morphed into Bill Belichick. We talked about it on Rome's show. I said that on his show. Rex always been very good with the media. Now he's testy. What you're seeing is a cornered rat. And when a rat gets cornered, he bites. And he's biting. He doesn't like the situation he's in. It's a bad situation. He's got John Idzik as general manager. He didn't hire him. He kept him. He should have never kept him. And now you have a general manager who doesn't like his coach, wants the rookie to play quarterback, which I get because he's his guy, and you might as well get this process started. And you have a coach who wants to try and win. So it's a bad situation. They're a dysfunctional team, like Tony said. But other than that, they're in New York, so everybody pays attention. They're a crappy team that people pay attention to. For the life of me, I can't figure it out.
And the best is, you know, the day after, Rex Ryan still not backing down much. I mean, listen, there's no rationale. I can't even explain it. Most of the time you can sit here and make an argument, okay, that makes sense why you do it. There isn't one. There's no excuse for it. And I'm sure he was
It's like in the game the other night. What was the rationale for Chip Kelly going for two?
Oh, trust me. We almost lost it up in the booth because you got to be kidding me. There should be a rule in the preseason that the game ends at regulation.
Right.
If it's a tie, then it goes down as a tie. There should
right.
be no.
If you want to work on your 2-point play, go ahead and work on it, no matter what the score is.
Yeah, because there's no overtime in the preseason. You got to be kidding me. I mean, maybe I don't know. Maybe he thought they're counted. Maybe he was going for the BCS. I have no idea. Trying to get
what you guys
better
think
bowl
of,
game.
What do you guys think of Chris Christie coming to the defense of his lap band buddy?
Yeah, what'd he say? I saw that. What'd he say?
He killed Manesh, the columnist who was questioning Rex and he said he was underpaid. I don't know. He just ripped the writer. Just stupidity. And he's not even a Jets fan. He roots for the Cowboys.
Whoa. Christie roots for the Cowboys?
Yeah, he's not a Giants fan. You see him in Giants gear sometimes and stuff. He's not a Giants fan or Jets fan. I heard he was a Cowboys.
Isn't there enough problems in
he's got
government
enough issues
that he can worry about that instead of ripping media about Rex Ryan?
Yeah, and Manesh is a bigger man than me because I would have taken shots back at Mr. Lab Band himself.
Christie says, I'll read the quote, idiot. The guy is a complete idiot. Self-consumed, underpaid reporter. The only reason he's empowered is we're spending all this time this morning talking about Manesh Mehta, who, by the way, I couldn't pick out of a lineup. And no Jet fan really gives a damn about Manesh Mehta. Yeah, I think they do. Christie, they read his article probably every day. So they probably do care what he says. And last time I checked, I didn't always like the media, didn't like the reporters, wanted to punch Pete in the mouth several times, but they're doing a job. I mean, that's what they're supposed to ask that question. That is a fair question. What in the world were you thinking about putting Rex Ryan in? And something, the end of the world must be coming soon because I'm defending the media now. I mean, unbelievable.
You are in the media.
I didn't say I'm not saying I'm not in the media. I'm just defending it.
Sounded a little bit like Randy Moss.
Did you see Randy Moss? Randy Moss said he's not in the media.
No, he needs to get over it. If he's on Fox Sports, he's in the media. That
right.
organization, just like I'm in the media.
Hey, who is Jeff Toole?
Jeff Toole is a quarterback from Wazoo, Washington State, and he's also going to start on opening day for the Buffalo Bills.
It's the first time in the modern era, the common draft era, that an undrafted rookie quarterback will start on opening day.
I'm going to pat myself on the back on this one because I do that list of guys I like better than the scouts every year.
Yeah.
And he was one of them.
What?
Yeah.
You watch
Jeff
a lot
Toole
of college
was on
football.
My list.
Well, you like
yeah,
him.
Well, I'm a Pac-12 guy, and when I watched them play, he got killed. His offensive line was terrible, and he stood in there and took shots and made throws, and his arm was plenty good enough. And I thought, you know what? This guy's worth a look. I thought he would be a backup quarterback in the NFL.
How bad?
And now look at him opening day.
How bad are the Bills, though, if an undrafted rookie free agent you're starting? That's who you're going to roll the ball out with.
Well, they did. They did go sign a USC guy.
Yeah. Matt Leinart on the roster now. I think they mentioned he'll be the third quarterback. So who's the backup?
They got Thaddeus Lewis, too.
Oh,
forget.
Man.
That's right. They traded Detroit for him.
What a lineup. Boy, they're going to be scaring
people.
It
might be the worst quarterback lineup ever on our team, right? I mean, if you really think about it.
Well, Cobb got hurt with a serious concussion, correct?
Yeah.
And then E.J.
His career is probably over.
E.J., that bad a concussion?
Oh, yeah. Plus, he's had one last year that forced him to miss a month. And now here you are having another one that wasn't even a bad hit, and he still had a concussion. I think he might be, you know, time to hang him up. And so EJ's got a knee injury or whatever. So you got problems there. It's bad.
Hey, speaking of knee injuries.
Oh, by the way, they open with New England.
That'll go well.
Good luck, Jeff Toole. Hey, another player, knee injury, and I think I read a tweet from you today that you think that Will Smith's career is done in New Orleans.
Yeah, he came back this year, lost weight. They transitioned into the 3-4, and he actually did a nice job. And all of a sudden, tore up his knee. And to me, you know, at that age, there were still questions about whether he could get it done anyways. I just think it's too much for him to come back from. And he was one of the best guys to go. I don't know if Tony ever talked with him when he went to cover their games, but I always thought Will was very insightful, liked the game, enjoyed the game, and always was very accommodating. And I hate to see guys' career end like that.
Good pass rusher too.
In his day,
yeah, never a great pass rusher, but a good pass rusher.
Right. You know, how much he had left, who knows? But it's still, I mean, he had worked so hard to get back, but that's three guys off of that starting projected defense that are now lost for the season in New Orleans.
Still got Drew Brees, don't they?
Yeah, but you got to be able to stop somebody, Tony.
I thought it was a quarterback lead, 70%. That's what I keep on hearing you say.
Yeah, well, the 70%, you got to have somebody that can knock that guy down too. I mean, that's part of the thing. And now all of a sudden you look at that defense, and who's going to knock people down for the Saints? That's a problem. They're going to talk about a team that's going to play a ton of shootouts. I think the 2013 NFL season will be by far and away the highest scoring season we've ever seen. I think we're going to see games that are so outrageously high scoring that we're going to look back and we go, oh my gosh, what a wild ride this is. The NFL finally has what they wanted.
And you'll love it because you love points.
Yeah, I love points. Everyone loves but points. I also like to see somebody, you know, pass rushers and hit people in the mouth and that whole thing. But I do believe this will be the highest scoring season we've ever seen. And it's going to be fantastic and enjoyable and fun to watch, and I can't wait. But I think defenses aren't capable of stopping these offenses anymore. I just don't think that with the rules changes and everything else, you're going to see a ton of points.
You think the tempo does that as well? I mean, that's not a rules change, but everyone's going to this up-tempo game.
And it makes all the sense in the world because you dictate tempo and you have defenses on the heels. It was interesting, though. I talked to Evan Mathis when I wrote that thing about the Eagles' offensive line. Tony, and you know this better than me, I asked him, why don't offensive linemen get tired when they're playing at the high tempo?
Hold that thought.
The defensive wears,
we have a break.
Wears down, why don't they?
I'll tell you later.
All right, more to come. Jaguars Monday after this. Jaguars Monday is brought to you by Crown Royal Maple. Whiskey started, maple finished. Brian Sexton and Tony Buscelli live from the Hanania Studio in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco out in L.A. where he's working on the Jim Rome Show all week long. Time for the Copy Facts Face-Off. And the story this weekend was about ESPN and PBS and the National Football League. And I'll set it up and let you guys go at it. But basically, here's the deal. ESPN and PBS were collaborating on a Frontline series documentary. And if you've ever watched PBS, you understand Frontline is one of their frontline programs in which they go after a topic. They worked with ESPN for the obvious reasons, and the National Football League was alarmed because they didn't believe that the show that was being produced was going to tell their side of the story. So the word is that some executives from ESPN had lunch with some folks from the NFL office, and then the collaboration was ended. So, here's the topic. You guys have the next 10 minutes, basically, till the news at the bottom of the hour. Should ESPN have backed down? Should the NFL have stepped in? Go.
Go ahead, Pete.
My answer is the ESPN should not have backed down. I get it. I understand why. But they should not back down. Journalism needs stories to be told. Now,
accurately,
if they didn't tell both sides of the story, if they didn't tell both sides of the story, that's on the people doing the story. And
but Pete, wait a second.
Let
me interrupt you. How often have we heard both sides of the story when it comes to this concussion? If you just sat back and read the stories from all the national media and local outlets, you would think the NFL is this monster that is throwing players back out there like pieces of meat, not caring about their future health, and knowing that they're going to be have issues the rest of their life and dementia and Alzheimer's, and now ALS is directly responsible, or supposedly, to concussions. And that's all you would know. And that the doctors and the trainers are part of this evil empire and this evil scheme to hide information from the players and push them out because we know that they're going to be messed up and they're not going to be able to think straight and talk for the rest of their lives. That's, if you just read the stories, that would be your impression. I get it. As an ex-player, I'm frustrated. The NFL, I would step in and say, now, wait a second. If this isn't going to be both ways, and by the way, ESPN, yes, you need to be a report, and yes, you can, should be able to do stories, but don't forget you're our partner in this
as far as playing games. How do they know it wasn't both ways?
Well, because based on what we've seen, Pete, tell me how many both-way stories. How many both-way stories have we seen?
They haven't seen the documentary.
I'm asking you a question. None of us have. You haven't either. How many times in the last 2 years have you read stories of both sides?
On the concussions, yeah. I don't think you see both sides.
You
of
don't.
The story.
That's the whole problem. So the NFL has every right to be alarmed and to protect their brand. Because frankly, I think this is.
See, here's where you're wrong, Tony. It's up to the viewer to decide if the story is one-sided or not. It's not up to the league to decide. Yes, it is.
That's fine if both sides are presented. But when all you are, it's like a fire hose right now of concussions and all the bad and the lawsuits and everything else, and which, by the way, I believe at times things are exaggerated when we have lawsuits out there and when people are trying to get money or their interests.
But how does the NFL know that this is exaggeration?
I've read stories of exaggerations.
No, Tony, how do you know that this is a legitimate question? How did the NFL have any idea? History, based on history. But that doesn't mean that the same thing was going to happen here. What they did is they took their power and used it to squash ESPN from getting involved in it. And what ESPN did was they realized, hey, look, I know who butters my bread. I know where my ratings come from. I know I need
this TV contract.
I know I need a good relationship with them. So I'm going to back out of this. It's not that important to me. All the NFL did was create more interest in the documentary, even though their supposed other side isn't getting told. And believe me, I'm a big proponent of what you say as it relates to the concussions. I think that there's been a lot of stuff that's been portrayed that's not accurate. There's no smoking gun, at least yet. But the NFL should not be stepping in and swinging the big axe and telling people to back down from journalism when they have no idea what is in it. They do not know what is in
that.
And I think ESPN made a big error.
Two things. One, I do agree with you that it might backfire in the NFL because now more people might watch it when they didn't even know that. Heck, I didn't even heard of Frontline. I didn't even know that PBS did things like this. So I'm sure there's many people like me that now are going to be like, oh, let me go watch this thing because it obviously is a big deal. That point I'll agree with you. The second point is at some point the NFL has to protect the brand and the game and the way the game is supposed to be played, and sooner or later has to push back a little bit, because my fear, and this is critical of the NFL, and I'm sure there's much smarter people working through the strategy of how to communicate this, but sooner or later, don't you have to say, wait a second, this isn't accurate. Wait a second. The science is not conclusive pointing towards this. Wait a second. There's not a large population of our players that played this great game that are walking around with early dementia or committing suicide or all what other major issues that are affected.
I agree with you.
But that's not happening,
that.
Pete.
That's not what we're arguing.
Yes, we are.
We are not arguing that.
I have no problem with the NFL.
They made them back down, and they had no idea what was in it, and ESPN backed down. Yeah, that's a problem to me. Do you remember when they made them back down, they took off Playmakers? Do you remember that show? You probably don't remember.
I remember Playmakers.
It portrayed NFL players as killing and drinking and drugging and everything else. And they pushed back and told them to take it off the air.
And they should. That's their right. The NFL, they have a brand to protect. The ESPN is their partner, and they have every right to go into that meeting and say, we are not comfortable with you as
for
our partner.
For something like that, Tony, I get. That's a show. It's loosely based on what they think the NFL looks like. This is journalism, and when you start trying to control what is said,
isn't journalism though, Pete? Isn't journalism supposed to give you both sides? Isn't good journalism?
PBS Frontline is one of the best. They're good journalists.
I'm not going to speak to Frontline because I'd be ignorant. I am ignorant about Frontline in the sense of I've never watched it. They might be the greatest ever, and if they are, more power to them. And I hope they do a fair representation of the issue. And if they do, great. My point is this. if you look at history and what we have seen from all the major networks, all the major newspapers and websites and everything else, I have yet to see that in a balanced approach. I have yet to see someone come out and say, the science is not conclusive. We are not sure. We're not completely sure of the long-term effect.
I mean,
we don't
knows.
See...
You can get two or three doctors to say two or three different things on something, too.
I haven't seen it.
This study shows that.
Pete. Have you seen anyone take that angle?
Yeah, there's been people that have disputed. The league has prevented plenty of evidence to dispute a lot of the claims.
Have you seen major stories done on that? The answer's no.
I don't remember reading them, but that's not the point.
You read a lot. You follow the NFL better than anyone I know. And if you haven't seen it.
You're talking about two different issues. I'm a big believer in you and the concussion issue. I think it's overblown. I think how can you prove that the NFL is what caused the concussions? How do you know it didn't happen in grade school and everything? That's not the issue. The issue is the NFL stepping in on somebody doing journalism and getting one of their partners to back away. And I can tell you, I work for one of their partners, okay? I work for CBS. Never, ever, in the whole time I've worked at CBS has the NFL called and tried to get me to back off doing something. And I've done things that have been highly critical of the league at times, and not once have they made me back away.
Yeah, but I don't think any of the issues that you were talking about could possibly reshape the game or is shaping the game in certain areas that I think are a problem and I don't like, and are the issue of a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit that the players are saying the NFL knew and hid that these concussions are doing all these terrible things.
But that's the job of the journalist. It's not the job of the NFL.
Well,
look, you can't put bad journalism on TV. You shouldn't. You should not.
I see it all the time, Pete.
Well, you do see it.
Turn
and you
on
know
cable
you
news.
It, you see it. New York Times does it as well. Everybody does it. But I'm saying it's up to the journalists' bosses, the people, to say this story is fair and balanced. Let's go do
Pete,
it.
Come
we're
on.
Show it our way. It's not up to the NFL to step in.
Are you kidding me? Look at the news that is put out in today's news. Is no longer about, you know, a lot of times about journalistic integrity and giving both unbiased views of both sides of any issue, whether it's sports or politics or you name it, and putting it out there for the viewers to decide. You know what it is? It's about manipulating a situation and getting your agenda and your message put out there. Turn on the cable news. Read the paper. That's what it is. And now if Frontline is not that, where I'll agree with you is the NFL should have watched it and should have said, can we view it at least and see what it is? And if it's fair and balanced, go put it out there and that's fine. That's where I agree they messed up.
They don't have the right to make that decision.
If you're their partner, they sure can.
If you start allowing them to have the right to make the decision, then you got problems in journalism.
All right, I've been reading.
We already have problems in journalism.
I've been reading the Onion website the whole time you guys were going at it, speaking of journalism. Pete. Tony, thanks so much. The Copy Facts face off at 7:20.
Winner again. I'm 3-0 undefeated.
You're crazy.
You know, we need to get a web poll going or something and find out what the listeners think and who they
side
with.
Tell them to call in and tell us. I'd like to know what the listeners think about that issue.
355.
You think it's okay?
NFL 1-800-355-6351. News is next on News Talk WOKV. You're listening to Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Living room with 2 minutes left on the clock.
All right, let's go, Jags.
Here comes Jackson DeVille ziplining through the house. Oh, guess we should have removed that window. 3rd and 1. We need to stop here. Buzz Lesny just pulverized that bookcase.
Dude.
Touchdown, Jacksonville.
I gotta get me some tickets.
Your living room will never be as exciting as Everbank Field. Get your tickets now. Call 904-633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Stand united.
Welcome back to the Hanania Studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
All right, a lively debate there in the Copy Facts face-off. You know, we had a bunch of calls.
Winner.
This is not scientific. All
winner.
Right? And please, don't call. We're going to get a web poll put up on jaguars.com. So
tell them the results, Ryan.
I'm going to let Joe, because Joe took the call. But please, we don't want Joe answering the calls every week, trying to keep up with everybody, to be fair about what's going on. But so what do you got for us, Joe?
All right, we've got We got a virtual tie.
Oh, he came back.
He came back at the end, yeah.
2-2.
No, 3-3.
Oh, it's 3-3. Even.
3-3 now.
All right. So, Pete, I promise, we'll get this up, and we'll find some sponsor to throw a lot of food on the table.
Food's good.
At the end of the season for the winner of the CopyFax face-off at the
food,
end of the year.
How about
well, he's got
here.
A long way to go because he's already down 0-3.
All right, let's grab a couple phone calls, and we'll start with Damon, who joins us from the beaches. Damon, welcome to Jaguars Monday. You're on.
Yeah, Tony, Pete, listen, I hear both you sides. I've got a 14-year-old nephew who played ball for Episcopal last year. He's over at Bowles now, and you know, he had a grade one is what they called it. But back in the day, you know, he would have been playing again. I want to know all the information. I don't want the NFL saying you can't get this information out there. And the winner of this argument, there's no winner. I mean, the winner is the most information out there is the best. And you and I, Tony, I totally agree with what you're saying. I don't like the way it's going. I think it takes away from the game. But at the same time, I want to be informed.
But don't you want accurate information? Don't you want to know accurate?
Yes,
and
yes,
not just hyperbole,
yes,
or speculation or assumptions?
I don't want a liberal network telling me the way it is with our president. It's the same argument. I don't want ESPN saying you can't give me this information because we don't think it's valid. But I do agree. I mean, the more information out there, it's up to the listener or the reader to take 7 sources of information, 8,
yeah, but,
10 sources.
But here's the problem. The problem I have is if all the people are hearing, Damon, is the bad, and
well,
and that's all you hear. If that's all the information,
well,
that's the problem.
Well, I mean,
and that's why, listen, it's on ESPN. If ESPN felt that strong, they should have run it. My whole argument was, I'm fine with the NFL protecting and making the proper and fair and balanced information is out. If ESPN felt so strongly about it, they should have run it. That's not my problem. They're backing down.
Right. But you, I want the information, and then I will make the decision. I don't want to be limited in the information that I have. And you know,
Tony, by the way, Tony was a big fan of the paper in Moscow during the
Pravda.
I mean, you know,
Pravda,
like I said,
truth.
My nephew, you know, I don't want him getting a concussion. I don't want him, you know, any of this stuff. But I want him to play hard, and I want him to play fast, and I want him, you know, to play football like you did. But I also want to know if there's something that they're not doing right or they could do differently. But I just think more information is more power. I mean,
great, Damon. Thanks. We appreciate the phone call. We got to move along, grab some other folks. I tend to be with you on that one. More information in all aspects of society. Transparency goes an awful long way. Let's grab Mike in Arlington. Mike, welcome to the show. You're on.
Hey, gentlemen. I just wanted to say it's all about truth to begin with, and then there's the human aspect, you know, free will, and then you're going to have some of these people that want to, you know, it's not that they have an agenda, they just think a certain way. They're more, you know, and they want to make a name for themselves also. And I totally agree with Tony, but it is about the truth to begin with. You know, you have to deal with editors and these certain people, you know, like the first caller said, you know, it is a more liberal media, and it's like they want to force feed you in a certain way. They want to shape the story, you know, for more excitement and more, you know, recognition for themselves.
Let me tell you,
Tony,
this. They all have an agenda. Everyone has an agenda. Let me tell you the agenda of ESPN and all these news networks. It's about ratings and making money. That's the agenda. And listen,
exactly. In
the NFL, they want to make money. They want to protect their brand. That's what their business is. The players in the lawsuit, I'm sure some of them want change, but it's, you know, it's about a lawsuit to get a big award. It's about money. I mean, there's an agenda everyone has, and where I will agree with Pete and Brian, I agree. Let's get the truth out there. Let's get the information. Let's hear both sides of the story. Let's hear really what the science is saying, not just what we hope the science says or what some doctor wants so he can get money for a grant or what some doctor who is in the pocket of someone else who doesn't want. I mean, whatever it is, I agree. All I'm saying is the NFL, in my perspective, I don't think it's been this you know, a bunch of fairly balanced articles with information of both sides of, you know, what the science could be. Well, it doesn't really say this. What I have read is a lot of people jump into conclusions and a lot of articles jump into conclusions based on the possibility. I mean, my goodness, if you read stuff, concussions cause everything. Everything from early dementia to Alzheimer's, ALS, depression, suicide, everything. Like every ill is blamed on concussions. And I'm just saying, and this is a very unscientific, and maybe it's a wrong statement. I don't see the majority of people who've played football from high school, in college, in the NFL, I don't see this huge population, because there's a large population that play this game, and a large population that hit their heads every day playing this game. And I don't see that translating to this gigantic population of early dementia and ALS and Alzheimer and depression. I see a lot of people depressed. I don't know if they ever played football. Unfortunately, I see people commit suicide. I'm not sure they all played football. So I just like both sides. Let's get the information out there.
Pete, jump in here.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Tony. I mean, when you look at it from that standpoint, the information needs to be fair and balanced. I'll give you that. But the other side of it is, it shouldn't be the league's role to be able to sit there and make sure it is.
That's
it's
on
up
ESPN.
To the people who present the stories to make sure it is, and that's where you're missing the boat here. The NFL can't be in a situation where it controls everything. It can't control the flow of news. It can give its side of the story. If the journalists doing the story don't get their side of the story, then they're doing a disservice, and the story shouldn't air in the first place. So I think you're misunderstanding the fact that this isn't a decision based on what the ESPN did right or wrong, or what the NFL did right or wrong. ESPN kind of yielded to him, and that was the problem.
All right, one more call on this before we break.
But that's, Pete, that's on ESPN. The NFL has a right to protect their brand, to make sure things are communicated in a proper manner. They're a private organization, a private company. They have the right. That's on ESPN. I mean, if we're arguing whether ESPN
are we arguing about whether
ESPN cowered or not? Yeah, they cowered. I don't care about that. It's their problem.
Jonathan's in it.
But that's the issue. That's what we're talking about. We both agree on the concussion issue. We're discussing whether the ESPN cowered and the NFL yielded too much power.
So
they
maybe
did.
We're both winners in this, Pete. Maybe we really just all agree.
You guys want to hold hands?
He's backing down already.
No, I'm not backing down. I'm right. I'm saying you are finally getting to my point of view.
Jonathan's in Atlanta. Let's get his perspective. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
I hate to shoehorn my way in such brilliance between Baselli and Prisco, but I don't know if you've heard of the book War on Football by Daniel Flynn. And I caught it on a satellite show, which we won't mention. I travel a lot, and actually happy to be listening to you guys. But it's amazing the statistics that, if I could say that, of deaths from everything else but football, kind of going with Baselli's point on how many people played. I was a neophyte up in Long Island playing, never had anything. And, you know, they go back to Frank Gifford, when he was injured, they kept him in a hospital for like over a month. And then they have evidence. You get the book. You guys should get the book if you haven't read, especially in your profession. And you go back to 1906, the Harvard Yale, the starting quarterback, they had him in the hospital, wouldn't let him play. So I think it's very hypocritical the way they think that science was so far back then that they didn't look into this. If you look into the evidence, they have always been treating it. And if you look at a guy like Junior Seau, to Baselli's point, on the slanted media, you know, Seau had a lot of debts and all that stuff. But like Baselli said, you don't hear about that. You just hear about he had a concussion, and like Baselli said, and he got depressed. I see a lot of depressed people in my business, and the bottom line is, if you look into Seau's life and some of these other guys' lives, when they had gambling issues and other things with their personalities, and maybe that would, you know, cause you to put a gun in your head. So, I mean, I want to say, as far as Prisco is concerned, I agree from that standpoint the NFL, but I think Goodell's been weak. Honestly, if you look at Bettman in a lowly NHL, he defends his sport. Goodell's been, bending over a little bit, pardon my French, with that. So I don't necessarily, it is kind of surprising that the NFL bucked up on this, because the NFL, I thought, has been kind of weak, like gerrymandering, going, you're right, it's too dangerous. And I agree with Baselli that, really is going to change the game. So that's all I had, my guys.
Yeah, and he mentions Junior Seau. He's a friend of mine. I mean, it was tragic. It broke my heart that that's what it happened to. And I actually almost found it offensive just to jump to the conclusion that it was based on a game he loved and played, and that's what caused him to do it. I mean, Junior was a great guy. Unfortunately, there was a lot of things going on in Junior's life. I don't know why he did it. I wish he never would have, because he was a tremendous person to be around. but I think it's completely unfair to everybody to jump to these conclusions before there's any science or any information that just says, oh yeah, it's because he had concussions, he played football. And I agree. I mean, I think it's about time the NFL steps up and says, wait a second. Let's look at this.
How do you know what they're presenting isn't accurate either? I mean, you know, you're sitting there saying, well, the NFL.
I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, well,
I think, look, I'll say
I'm
this,
a,
Pete.
I'm with you. There's,
Pete, I'll say this. I think you and all your brethren are afraid. I think they're afraid to come out and say, wait a second. Wait a second on the concussion issue. Wait a second to blame it.
No. You're not, you obviously don't follow me I'm a big believer. I'm a big believer in this is a witch hunt to go get money. Unless the NFL has a smoking gun somewhere and they hid documentation
by the way, that's what that book is about the lawyers.
Right. Well,
yeah,
I think how can you blame the NFL when football's been played for years and years and years on the Pop Warner? Hey, I never played in the NFL, and I'm sure I had concussions. And so everything that I write and do, I'm going to use it
I'll tell you this, Pete. My goodness. Today, if you get a headache or you have a concussion, you're out. I mean, I'm not questioning any – well, I guess I am. All of a sudden, everyone, like sensitive to light and wearing sunglasses and – I just don't remember that when I played. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to always improve the game and improve medical care and making sure we're taking care of guys, but let's do it based on the science of what really is happening. And listen, I'll go back to this. At the end of the day, if you don't want to sign up for the risk of the game of football, then don't. There's plenty of other sports that aren't as good as football, but they're fine. Go play them.
And it's coming to that. It's coming to that. You're going to have to sign away any legal right down the, in the future to sue the NFL or sue your team, or else you're not playing.
And they'll do it.
And guess what? Guess how many guys will refuse? Guess how many guys won't sign that?
Nobody.
The answer is zero.
All right, we need a break.
Everybody will sign it.
Pete's in California. We're here at the EverBank Stadium Studios, the Hanania Studio. One final segment. Jaguars Monday when we return on Jaguars Radio. All right, one final segment. A little more than 6 minutes left in the program this evening. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Every Monday night, we are going to have a very lively conversation here on these airwaves. The first hour will be Jaguar-centric, what happened on Sunday. The second hour around the National Football League, because Pete is out and about around the National Football League. And, of course, we all follow
him out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the show is all about. So it'll be fun every single week. Tonight was a very interesting topic. I don't know about you. I want to read Daniel Flynn's book. I've already ordered it from Amazon.
I'm going to buy it. War on Football?
War on Football. I had never even heard of it.
I've never even heard of Daniel Flynn. Has he written anything else?
He may have. I didn't go that deep into it. What do you know about him, Pete?
Yeah, I don't know about that book. I got to find it, too. Yeah. I hadn't heard about that book. See, we learn something every day.
Long as your mind is open, right? What do coaches say? Your mind only operates?
A certain former offensive tackle seems to have a closed mind.
How do I have a closed mind? I'm probably one of the
member.
Let me ask you a question.
You got to learn to be a member of the media.
I already admitted I'm a member of the media. Pete, I mean, you deal with players. I mean, I wonder how many. My guess is I'm probably in the. I mean, I don't know. Am I in the minority of players, current players and ex-players that feel this way about the whole deal?
Yes, but when people speak privately, you're more along the lines of what most people believe.
So there's not very many people being vocal.
But you know what people will say, Tony, you work for the team now, so you're not going to say, you know how that is, but I think
I've been saying this for 2 years, 3 years. I'm not on any concussion lawsuit.
But who else? Okay, you've played with a lot of guys. You see a lot of guys. Do you ever come across former teammates that agree with you?
You know, it's funny. It doesn't come up much. I think probably Jeff, I don't know if he feels as strongly as I do. He's probably leans towards my opinion, though.
I think he does. I won't speak for him,
yeah,
but
does.
I think he does.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, he does. We've talked about it, but
I don't believe he's
on
the lawsuit.
You know, there's a lot of other guys. You remember you play with a lot of guys. I'd be curious to see how they all how they look at it.
And I'm not going to mention any names because it's not my position to do that. But I know guys I played with are in the concussion lawsuit.
Yeah, I've heard some of them too.
Yeah, I mean, not my position. I mean, listen, that's they got to make their decision of why they're doing it. I'm not going to. I don't listen, and I could be wrong. I mean, maybe there's some smoking gun that comes out that the NFL has is this evil empire that has all this information that they know that concussions are going to cause everything, including the end of the world, and they're protecting it to protect their revenue. I mean, maybe that comes out. I don't think it does. I don't think I'm wrong. But the funny thing is, and I'm not saying if that is true and that there is a smoking gun, the NFL is wrong, I would still play.
You'd sign anyway.
I'd still sign up. I'd still go do it right now. Maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm dumb.
I've done that, Tony.
And so that's my point.
I went around and asked guys. Every guy would play.
Yeah, I mean, so I always go back to that. So if you're willing to still play, even if there is a smoking gun, are we just suing because they're bad people? Or are we suing? And I know it's all legal mumble jumble. And guess who's going to make the most money out of this deal?
The attorney.
The lawyers.
I mean, that's who's making the money. I mean, come on. I mean, it is what it is. But I go back to I'd play. I think it's a great game. I wish they'd change the rules to make it more like it used to be. I think it's actually more dangerous than the thing we talked about last year because you're going to see guys with knees and ending careers not allowing them to do the thing they love to do. I mean, I think there's a way to legislate head hits and still make it safe, and the way you enforce those rules, and we don't have time to get into that tonight, but I would play. I'd go back. I'd do it again. I mean, I know it's dangerous. I mean, I had a conversation, I know the ex-players say, oh, well, they don't let their kids play. My kids play the game. I don't want them to get hurt. My kid drives now. I don't want him to get in a car accident, but I'm going to let him drive.
Great point.
Brian and myself, we played, and we didn't play nearly at the level you did, and we didn't play for money. But if you ask me if I could play again, I'd play again.
Agreed.
And I'm sure Brian would play again.
Yeah, because the football experience was one of the great experiences of my life, and I know talking to you that it was for you too, and ours was just high school.
I mean, listen, I love football for a lot of reasons. I loved it, I mean, because it was my living, and I got paid to do what I loved to do. But I could argue that some of my favorite moments are when I played in high school and played at USC and didn't get paid a dime. I loved it. Actually enjoyed going to practice back then. I probably loved it more.
And you learn a lot of life lessons from playing football more than any other sport. I'm a big believer in that. I always have been. And anybody who's played basketball and baseball, yeah, you can learn some life lessons, but there's nothing like learning them on a football field where there's so many different people that you have to interact with. It's the biggest roster. It's a diverse roster. There's big guys, fat guys, skinny guys, fast guys, black guys, white guys. It's the greatest game that there is to learn life lessons.
And guess what? Football's a tough game. I'm just not talking about the game itself when you play. It's a tough game to practice. It's a grind. It's hard. It teaches you to persevere. It teaches you to be tough. I love basketball. I love baseball. Those are great sports. But there's something about football, and you hit on the community, working with other people. I mean, just the camaraderie. But it's the toughness that I think is important. I think it's important to be tough. And I'm not talking about macho thing. I can beat up someone else. That's not the toughness. I'm talking about something inside of you that knows how to work through when it's uncomfortable. And that's what football does.
All right, we are out of time. Pete, safe travels. Enjoy your week in L.A. We'll see you next Monday night.
You got it.
That's Pete Frisco from CBSSports.com. Tony Buscelli, Brian Sexton for Joe Fortunato. Thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday. Have a great night, everybody.